Waiting to make sure we have quorum. We have one, two. We have new member Alexander. I saw
We
three of
do.
them.
We
Okay,
do.
great. Let's go ahead and get started then. I'd like to call this meeting to order. And Erica, is there any guidance you want to provide as this is my
Absolutely.
awesome. Thanks.
Thank you, Eric. So before we get started with the agenda, I just wanted to go over a few things. What a difference a month makes. There's been a lot of changes since the last time AuchVac met. So I just wanted to go over a few items so that everyone's on the same page. And I took notes to make sure that my instructions are clear and complete. So I'll be referring to my notes. So number one is, as of yesterday, we have a new second district AuchVac appointee, and that is Alexander Gonzalez. He's from Costa Mesa, and that is Supervisor Foley's appointee. So Alexander, if you'd like to just take a moment and introduce yourself.
Yes, thank you very much, Erica. Good afternoon, AuchVac. Thank you very much for welcoming me. It's an honor to be here. I'm very humbled to serve and represent the second district. And I'm eager to get started. I think, for now, the plan is to just adapt and, learn to this new format that I'll be, part of. And then just one quick caveat, I do have to hop off at a 12:30 for another commitment. I erroneously recorded the wrong time for the AuchVac meeting today, but definitely will commit to attend to the meetings and represent the district as best as I can. So I know there's a couple people here on the call that I have yet to reach out to and talk to. I'm working on it, balancing it with my other work schedule right now, but we'll be in touch soon and good to be with you all here. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, it's
Thank
very
you and
nice to meet
welcome
you and
aboard.
welcome. So, I just wanted to mention as a reminder, OC Community Services, we provide support to AuchVac, but we in no way have anything to do with AuchVac appointments. That's strictly a board's decision. So, it's simply our role to carry out the board's decision. So, we just wanted to take a moment to thank David Hahn for his service. With Alexander being the new second district appointee, that means that David Hahn is no longer the chairman of AuchVac. But it doesn't reflect the job he did by any means. He did an excellent job and really appreciate his service to AuchVac in the role of chairman during his term. So, because we're in this situation, we consulted with County Council and, we work in lockstep with County Council on all issues related to county boards and commissions. The two things that County Council advised on is number one, what happens with the chair and vice chair positions now that David Hahn is no longer a part of AuchVac? And number two, what happens with the executive committee because we do have a position of immediate past chair? So I'll share what County Council advised on. And number one is that Eric Duane, because he is the current vice chair for the current term, he will automatically assume the chair position. So, congratulations, Eric Duane. You are now the current chair of AuchVac. And then, with that, Eric now has the authority to appoint a vice chair of AuchVac. So, no vote is needed. We can do that in the meeting today. So, we will ask that Eric appoints a vice chair for the remainder of the current term. But before we do that, I just wanted to cover the second item that council advised on, and that is the executive committee. So, if the immediate past chair of the current term is no longer on AuchVac, that position is to remain vacant for the remainder of the term. So, we technically don't have an immediate past chair. Now, we'll have elections in June for the July term. And if Eric Duane is not selected as the new chair for the July term, then he will become the immediate past chair. Does that make sense? Okay. So I'll turn it over to Eric if you want to take the time to appoint your vice chair for the remainder of this term. You can take a moment to do that.
Sure, absolutely. I would like to, at this time, appoint Stephanie Wade as my vice chair. Stephanie, will you accept that position?
I will. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Congratulations. I believe that's all I had, Eric. We can continue on with the top of the agenda.
Awesome. Can we move into the Pledge of Allegiance? Stephanie, would you lead us?
Absolutely. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Amen.
Thank you. All right. Can we have a council roll call, please?
Sure. Vladimir Anderson.
Vladimir Anderson, present.
Eric Duane.
Present.
Alexis Federico.
Present.
Alex Maslin.
Present.
Alexander Gonzalez.
Present.
Robert McDonald.
Here.
Mario Munoz.
Here.
And Stephanie Wade.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Let's go ahead and move into public comment. At this time, are there any members who have put in any requests for public comment?
So we did not receive any via email. We do have a number of attendees join the meeting right now. If you would like to speak, please go ahead and raise your hand and I will unmute you. I do not see anyone that has raised their hand to speak.
All right, we'll move right into our guest speaker, Richard Owens, Chair of Orange County Veterans Military Family Collaborative, Housing Collaborative. Are you here today? Is our guest
speaker? Yes, I am here.
All right.
Yes.
Well, you have the floor, sir.
Thank you. I would like to thank the OCVAC for the opportunity to speak today on behalf of just some veteran housing issues that we are seeing here in Orange County, and hopefully be able to take some of these measures and bring an awareness to them to help better assist our veterans out there, especially our homeless veterans. So I have three main talking areas for today, or three main points. Is one, the need for a public registry for veterans. We had a public registry, a public veterans registry, and it's now gone into the HMIS, Homeless Management Information System. And in doing so, it has created some barriers, which I will address here shortly. The second area that I want to address is the need for interim housing, specifically interim housing for veterans in Orange County. And the last part is affordability. So the first area I want to talk about is the need for a public registry. Back in December of last year, the current system through coordinated entry, we went away from having a public registry to where agencies and service providers used a Google form. It was completed in person, and then it was submitted and individuals were then placed on a spreadsheet that was shared with the community that identified homeless veterans. The way it's currently done now through HMIS is that individuals are enrolled in HMIS, and while they're in HMIS, that when they're entered in as veterans, then that shows that they're added to the community queue, or the coordinated entry community queue. And so that is then how they get matched to housing opportunities. So as of today, when I looked at the community queue, it showed that we only had 89 veterans in the community queue that are receiving services or that have been enrolled in CES. Now, the last count that I received from, and this is going back to February, is that we had 171 homeless veterans. And if you go to December prior to the queue being established, you would see that we actually had over 200 homeless veterans. And so part of they're still in the process of migrating information from the veteran registry spreadsheet into HMIS to make sure the numbers are there. So that's one of the reasons why the numbers are off. The other reason is just because there's not as many people now entering veterans in. There's not the ability for the public or for agencies not connected to veteran resources or not connected to CES. There's no place for them to enroll it. They have to refer the veteran to a program that is involved in CES and has access to the system to enroll them in there. And so what this does is this creates gaps in our reporting and our understanding of homelessness, because as you can imagine, if we started in November and we had over 200 veterans, now when we look at a community queue and we see we have 89 veterans, that's it creates a false number or a false narrative. Even looking at knowing we had over 200 in November and looking and seeing that in February we had 171, there's still a false narrative there, because we're still missing, we're not capturing everybody in this. And the system may not be designed to capture everything, but we need a public registry that allows us to capture not only individuals who are enrolled in HMIS and connected, but also to capture individuals who may be homeless but are not connected to agencies who have the ability to enroll in HMIS. A great example of this is the American Legion 291. They have a emergency fund where they can assist veterans in need. They don't enroll those individuals into HMIS. And in fact, most of your American Legions or your BFW posts, they're not going to enroll veterans if they're providing assistance to them because they don't have that capacity. But if there was a form where they could say, hey, we're going to put this individual as homeless and we're going to report this individual as homeless because they came to us seeking assistance, right? They don't have the ability to provide all the supportive services that are there, but they can provide an emergency service. They can provide a hotel for the night or maybe for a couple of days. And then, but by having a public registry where they can then put them into the queue, it allows the veterans to get connected to those service providers. It brings an awareness that here's an individual who is not connected, who is seeking assistance, and we need to now connect them and help them find the resources. That's one important aspect of it. The other important aspect is the OCVMFC has recently kicked off the Ask the Questions campaign. And in this campaign, we're encouraging service providers in the community to ask two questions. The first one is, have you or a family member ever served in the military? And two is, do you have children? Now, the purpose of this is to identify veterans in the community who may not openly identify as veterans or may not always come forth as a veteran. This campaign, we want to encourage non-veteran service providers to ask that question so we can then better identify our veterans in the community. But where do they go from there? How do they get them connected to veteran resources? How do we know that there's a need? It's one thing to be able to make a referral. It's another thing to be able to put them on a list where they, the individual needs to agree and give consent to be placed on the registry. But by being on that registry, now as we ask the questions, we can help facilitate the process of opening doors for greater care, identifying veterans who may not identify themselves as a veteran seeking resources, and then just create a better understanding of what the veteran community needs and who our homeless veteran community is. And so that's, again, why I advocate strongly for going back to having a public veterans registry, so that way we can connect, identify, and assist veterans in need. The second topic that I want to talk about is interim housing. And currently right now, Orange County has zero interim housing that is veteran specific. There's no veteran specific interim or bridge housing in Orange County. The closest that we have is the Villages of Cabrillo in Long Beach. And those are our GPD programs. So that's the closest that we have. There are interim housing and bridge housing in Orange County, but there are none that are veteran specific. And so again, I want to advocate that this does not have to be a GPD program. In fact, we have a perfect opportunity with Project Home Key. Right now there's the county's accepting proposals for Project Home Key 2.0 projects. I think this is a great opportunity to bring interim housing into Orange County through Project Home Key. Because Project Home Key, there are two options with Project Home Key. The first is that it will go straight to permanent supportive housing. The second option is that it will operate, you have property that will operate as interim housing while looking for a permanent funding source. So you operate 3 to 5 years under, or up to 3 to 5 years under interim housing, while that property and the developers and the team are looking for a way to permanently finance that property. What this does is this gives us an opportunity to, one, look at our short-term goal of ending veteran homelessness, or coming to functional zero for veteran homelessness, while long-term developing a plan and a system here in Orange County that is able to handle all levels of veteran homelessness. Right now, we currently have projected 234 project-based vouchers alone for VASH. There are currently over 170 that will be coming online by the end of this year, or that are either currently in field and being utilized, or will be developed by the end of fiscal year 2021. We have more coming on board next year. Total, that's gonna give us 234 VASH vouchers. So we have the permanent supportive housing, and that's not counting tenant-based vouchers. That is only project-based. So as far as the permanent supportive housing, we have that element. We have the building of new shelters in Orange County and navigation systems. And so we have that entry level. They're not veteran specific, but there are enough beds available to address that get them off the streets and into a bed tonight. There's a system in place for the long-term permanent supportive housing. We're missing that middle piece. That's what Orange County is missing, is that interim bridge housing. How do we get someone out of a shelter and help prepare them for permanent housing? And we need that interim piece. So I see Project Home Key as being a tool and a resource that we can utilize. This is an opportunity with Project Home Key 2.0 coming up for us to address that short-term need and then look at long-term and say, okay, how do we maintain this? Once we have got our current homeless population, what do we do to make sure that we have a system in place that takes a veteran from the street and prepares them to be permanently housed? And that's what this opportunity does. It allows us to fill a missing gap while creating a long-term plan for that. And the last thing I want to touch on is affordability. So 211 today released their needs report. And in that report, 42% of their requests are housing requests. And that doesn't include the number of emergency rental assistance requests that they're receiving right now. And I think in Orange County and Southern California, affordability continues to be an issue, especially for our homeless individuals or those who are low income, fixed income, is how do they afford a market rate apartment? And in reality, they can't. And where we're going with project-based and some of these tenant-based vouchers, we've got a system in place to be able to provide vouchers, but not everybody is going to be eligible for a voucher. Not everyone is going to take that opportunity. And so when we look at affordability, another thing that area that we should really look at is how can we link our affordable housing units in Orange County to CES, right? How can we get these units that we know are being built and the rent, these are units that are set aside for to be 30, 40, 50, 60% AMI. How do we get that connected to CES? And can we use veterans as a pilot to say, let's have a, when a housing opportunity and affordable housing comes up, can we provide that opportunity to see every Tuesday, there's a weekly, there's a match meeting where we match veterans to funding and housing opportunities. So can we use that as a tool to place these affordable housing units into there to match veterans to it and provide them a small window, 1 to 2 weeks to get document ready and submit their paperwork. If they don't do it within that window, then it becomes open to the general public. Now we already do this whenever we do new developments. When we do new developments, there's a lottery where individuals are allowed a certain percentage of time to submit their application and submit for a property. And from that lottery, individuals are chosen and they're not chosen to go into a property. So how can we utilize those current systems that are already in place, but tweak those systems and apply it so that way we have individuals who we're not trying to put someone who is on Social Security or maybe on a 10% or 20% VA disability, so in a very limited low fixed income, but they don't want to go into permanent supportive housing. So what are our options? It's either to keep them into a shelter or to put them into a unit that they really can't afford long term. So by being able to bring that additional element of our affordable housing to CES to match homeless veterans to that or homeless individuals in and families in general to that, then we create this, again, it goes back to the systems and to system flow, and it allows us to meet everybody where they are at. We provide a preference through a short time window to these individuals, and if they don't get it, then it goes to the wait list. And that's the other issue that comes up with trying to link individuals to affordable housing is there's already a wait list. Many of these properties have a wait list already of individuals wanting to get into them. But what I'm trying to advocate for here is that we utilize these systems to prioritize our homeless population to get them in and give those individuals a 1 week lead time, so to speak, to apply. If they don't apply, if nobody matches and we don't get those individuals in, then it goes to, we go to the wait list, default back to the wait list and go from there. So those are the three areas that I think would, if we were to address those three areas, we could definitely get to where we want to be with functional zero, and we could make a significant impact in veteran homelessness in Orange County in a very short amount of time. So, and that's all I have. If anybody has any questions.
That's quite a bit. So that's plenty. So let me see if I can encapsulate this. Three main issues. You want to get back to the public registry. We're lacking interim housing and we need affordability. Is that what I heard?
Yes.
Okay. Forgive my ignorance. What is Potter's Lane?
So Potter's Lane is a project-based housing.
Okay.
It is, there are eight VASH units there. For Potter's Lane, I believe you have to be at
I don't know under the requirements.
Under 30% AMI.
Okay.
And it's a studio. They're set up as a SRO.
And then, yeah, there we go again. So,
Eric, Midway City.
Yeah. Yep. Forgive my ignorance again. You're using a ton of acronyms. I've spent an entire life speaking acronyms. What is AMI? What's SRO and all that? Please spell it out.
Right. So AMI is the average median income.
Awesome.
Every year, HUD releases the new data for.
Yeah. Okay. Now, what's the next one?
with SRO is basically the studio.
Style apartment? Is that so? That's an abbreviation for
abbreviation for a studio type of apartment. Yes.
Perfect. Like a single room occupancy.
Single room occupancy. SRO, the LMNOP at the AMI. Okay. Any questions from my august gathering of folks in our council? That was a lot of material. We appreciate your time and
effort.
I do have a question.
Hi, Richard, thank you so much for the information you just provided. How do we address the issue of housing with in this county with so many, with a lack of opportunity for local residents? I mean, I remember when I was employed with this particular city, I recall it being very difficult to provide housing for our employees that work in a very prominent city in mm-hmm. Kansas County. How can we address that issue of providing housing with the limited resources that are in the County of Orange?
Yeah, and I think that is the question everybody's asking. How do we do that? A great thing or a good kind of area to look at is at the city of Anaheim. And I know that they recently had 3 apartments in the Platinum Triangle area that have agreed that they worked out a program, and those apartments are going to be affordable housing for middle income families, right? And so it's maybe how it's looking at that model and say, you know, is that successful, and how could we apply that to other areas? Because we have low income affordability for individuals making under 50% AMI or in that range. And so now we see cities like the city of Anaheim, who's looking at how can we create affordable housing for our middle income families. And so I think that's a great area to look at. I also, when we look at affordability or even being able to get individuals into units, if we look at Welcome Home OC, and that model with having a landlord mitigation fund and being able to work with landlords, it's not just a matter of affordability, it's also a matter of just getting in the door. Mm. And so, you know, can we expand that program, or can we use that program as a model to create more of a base or a pool of landlords who are willing to work with individuals who maybe have credit issues, who have income issues, various barriers that we have out there. So we have the tools in place. It's one, being able to identify, and two, and analyzing that and saying, how can we use that as a model throughout the county?
Okay. And are you proposing something similar to Section 8 housing, where we have opened up a specific amount of resources of places in the county to veterans? Is that something that you're proposing?
We already have the resources out there, but it's either dedicated. So we already have affordable housing out there. Jamboree, that's one of our bread and butters, is providing both. We provide both affordable housing and permanent supportive housing. So what I'm proposing, specifically in the affordability portion here, is that we either set aside a set of a portion of rooms in our affordable housing units, or whenever an opportunity presents itself. So if an individual moves out of affordable housing, that opportunity is a priority is given to our veteran or homeless community to fill that room for that unit first before it goes to the wait list. And that it should be a focus. So it's someone who's document ready, who is ready and willing, and we can move them in there pretty quickly. So I would say that window, we're not looking for a 30-day window. It's like a 1 week preference or priority to our homeless individuals, in this instance, homeless veterans, to be able to get them into that opportunity. If not, then we default to the next person on the list.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, yes, Richard. Stephanie. This is Alexis. Hi, thank you for your presentation and for the information so far. Just one quick question. Have you communicated the need specifically for interim veteran housing to the Orange County Housing Finance Trust?
I have not, no.
Okay, that might be worth looking into. I'm not sure if they're aware, again, of the specific need for the gap bridging, you know, the immediate housing versus long-term housing. That might be something that they can either look into or you can at least raise to their attention.
Okay, great. Yeah, I will definitely look into that.
If I could, first of all, I wanted to thank Richard for, you know, like unlike most of us Marines, he wasn't shooting from the hip and he had really well thought out things to tell us. I want to echo what Eric said about, you know, the acronyms. Richard, you're the new head of the Collaborative Housing Working Group, and you brought a lot of new energy there. And I will tell you that, you know, I mean, I love the past chairs, but you are better about explaining acronyms, and it's really helpful when you do. So to the maximum extent, like, remember that most of us who don't work professionally in like veterans housing are pretty stupid. And so like, I'm picking it up little by little as I go along, but sometimes because I don't use the acronyms frequently, an acronym I knew, I sort of forget. So, you know, like if you can continue to do that in your presentations, especially in the collaborative, it would be helpful. And then the only other thing I wanted to ask was about the CES. I assume that's run by the VA.
That's another acronym, Stephanie.
No.
Thank you. So the coordinated entry queue is run by the is run by whom? Who's the owner of that system?
So the coordinated entry system is owned by Orange County. The VA actually does not report into and through CES, what we're really talking about here is the Homeless Management Information System, which is the acronym for HMIS, and that is where we collect all, and that's required by HUD that we have that system to collect information for all of our homeless individuals. I'm not saying that we have to get away from that. What it is we still need a public registry, an opportunity for individuals not associated with that who have no idea what HMIS is, or they never heard it before in their life. But they know that if they have a Google form, that they can put someone that they, a homeless veteran, on this Google form, and then that's going to get sent over as well and get veterans connected to service providers.
Yeah, that sounds like the specific recommendation I'll be making to Supervisor Cheney or JB, that, you know, he's that the vice chair can, you know, maybe talk to the county and see if there isn't a way to do that. That was very helpful. Thank you, Richard. Mm-hmm.
You're welcome.
Thank you for your time, Richard. We appreciate you coming to this group. Thank you.
Can I can I add something really quick? I think it's important to note that the VA housing system, so CRRC, is not entering into HMIS as well. So not only do we have community programs not entering into HMIS, our VA system, who is managing the VASH system, they're not entering into HMIS.
Mr. Alexander, so that means that, you know, when we talk about the number of veterans, you know, like, because I go to the collaborative meetings and we talk about who's on the registry and we say whether it's 89 or 189, there's another pipeline of veterans in VA that might not adhere completely just to Orange County, but that, say, VA Long Beach has its own sort of system for counting for veterans that might not be showing up in the county's registry. Is that right?
Historically, we've had the list that Richard is referring to. We coordinated between county, the VA system, and all of our community partners who were supporting our homeless veteran communities. So, yeah, we had this public list that we worked from together to support every veteran in our community who was at risk of homelessness and actively homeless. So at this point, you know, within the county with CES, our coordinated entry system taking over the list that we're maintaining, Not everyone is able to enter into HMIS and access that list, including the VA system now. So the VA is working on establishing relationships and partnerships with people who can enter into HMIS, but it creates additional steps and potential barriers to engaging with the veteran community that are actively seeking housing support.
Yeah, and to speak to that directly, the Goodwill Tierney Center is the agency that the CRRC, Community Resource and Referral Center, that is our essentially the triage site where all homeless veterans are in Orange County are sent to be assessed for their veteran, to be verified as veterans and to be assessed for what housing resource they would be best paired for. And so they are currently working with the Goodwill Tierney Center to enter those individuals into HMIS. Again, it goes back to there's multiple systems, multiple people in play. And like Dr. Alexander said, there's a lot of hands in the cookie jar, so to speak, to make that happen.
And I'll say that here on the behavioral health side, we're in the same boat that the VA system is in. We can't enter into HMIS. There are issues of confidentiality that we run into within the system of HMIS and entering our client information into that system. So on the behavioral health side within the healthcare agency, within the county itself, we have barriers that we're working to address, but it really does create a little extra stress for our veterans and sometimes makes it a little more difficult for them to gain access to housing services and support. Thanks, Richard. Sorry to kind of step on your toes.
No, that's fine.
Felt like it was important to share and really closely tied to what you were saying.
Yes.
Appreciate that. All right, are there any further questions? Well, thank you for your time today, sir. We appreciate you coming and bringing that information to us.
Yeah, you're welcome very much. Thank you for having me. It was an honor.
Take care. So let's go ahead and move on to item 6, action item, the review and approval of the draft college fee waiver letter to be submitted to the Orange County Board of Supervisors. Has everyone had a chance to look at that? That was sent out a few days ago. I don't think there's any need for change. Anybody want to make a motion we accept it as written?
Other than a small typo I noticed at the end of it, that was my fault. There's a colon at the end of the last sentence and it has David Hobbs' name on it. So obviously we need to discuss who's going to sign it.
Yeah.
And also, would it be appropriate for it to come from all of us? Is it more appropriate to come from the chairperson? And I don't know if Erica, if
Those
you feel comfortable
questions.
Weighing in on that or Jenna.
It's really not prescribed. You can decide if you just want the chair's signature on there or if you would like for it to be on behalf of all of OCVAC. That's perfectly acceptable too. I've seen it done both ways. We can always list the members of OCVAC's names on there and then the chair can sign or everyone can submit the letter on behalf as a group.
I'd like to make a motion that we accept the letter with the following changes. Unfortunately, taking David's name off it and that we have everyone's name on it. And then of course we have to remove that colon in the last sentence. So that is my motion.
All right, there's a motion on the floor. Is there a second?
I second that motion.
I'll second.
All right, there's a second on the floor. Is there any discussion, further discussion? All right. All in favor, please say aye, raise
Chair
your hand.
Dwayne,
okay.
Chair Dwayne, we actually will have to do a roll call vote.
She's breaking up, but I hear that we need to do a roll call vote and that's fine. So hopefully you get a better connection and
we'll have
do
to
a
do
roll
a
vote.
Roll call vote because we are virtually meeting.
That's
fine.
Yep. We hear
Vladimir
you now.
Anderson?
Yeah, you might want to turn off your video.
Okay. Yeah, maybe I'll try that.
There you go.
Okay. Vladimir Anderson.
Aye.
Eric Dwayne.
Aye.
Alexis Federico.
Aye.
Alexander Gonzalez.
Aye.
Alex Maslin.
Aye.
Robert McDonald.
Aye.
Mario Munoz.
Aye.
And Stephanie Wade.
Aye.
Also, for the record, I have Stephanie Wade motioning and Mario Munoz seconding.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
Very good. The motion has been passed.
And thank you to Alexis. It was a great letter, and she was the one that really moved on it.
Well written. Thanks. Except for that colon?
Hey.
No, it was great. No one would have caught that but a lawyer. All right. Moving on to item 7, executive committee report. I have nothing to report this time, so we'll go ahead and move forward to the update from Erica, item 8.
Thank you, Chairman Hahn. Lots going on with the Veterans Service Office these days. So,
Chairman who?
I'm sorry. Whoopsies. Chairman Dwayne.
Thank you very much.
Test. You passed. Force of habit. So hopefully you all saw the latest edition of the Big Voice publication that we're putting out monthly. So you can see that we're still serving veterans in high numbers, anywhere from 1,600 to 1,700 veterans a month. And it's also a chance for us to highlight some success stories and give some kudos to our staff. If you hadn't had a chance to read the last one, really excellent job by one of our veterans claims representatives. She was relentless in her research to find a connection between brain tumors and being exposed to carcinogens while a veteran was in service in Kuwait. And it was because of her due diligence and relentless research that she was able to convince the VA of that connection and get him his award. So really, really great work. And that happens every day, all day. I wish we had enough space on the Big Voice to give kudos to all of our claims reps, but it's just an opportunity for us to highlight the good work of the office. The other thing I wanted to update OCVAC on is some of our staffing changes. First and foremost, I wanted to introduce our new County Veteran Service Officer and Veterans Claims or Veterans Remains Officer, and that is Elena Kim. So I'll give her an opportunity to introduce herself to the group.
Thank you so much, Jessica. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Elena Kim, and I'm very excited to be here at my first OCVAC meeting. I've heard so much about these meetings and just very excited to jump in and start to get to know each and every one of you. I've had a very warm welcome here at the office. We're still going through lots of changes. So I am excited to keep folks updated on those changes moving forward. I'll just say a little bit about my background for those of you who I haven't had the opportunity to speak to directly. So I am an Army veteran. I served from 2005 to 2010, did my deployment to Iraq. And primarily worked in Intel while I was in the military. When I got out of the military, I moved straight to Washington, D.C., even though I am a California native, and went to school out there on the GI Bill, the post 9/11 GI Bill. And then I also was hired onto the VA while in grad school. I worked with the Department of Veterans Affairs in their headquarters building, mostly doing congressional relations and legislative technical analysis. And then I was asked by a local member of Congress here in California to come return to California and work some veterans and other constituent issues in his home district. From there, I did a little bit of political campaign work, but I do like to always mention to folks, I had a really life-changing experience when my grandmother was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And I took a step back from work to become a full-time family caretaker to her. And I like to mention that to folks because it's a big part of what inspires me every day to continue to help folks who are in need, just knowing from a firsthand experience that the services that we provide to people are very important, not just to the individual in need, but obviously to their family members as well, and to the community at large. So that's kind of the attitude and spirit that I'll bring to this position. And looking forward to working with each and every one of you. And I thank all of those who are involved in helping me get here today. If there's any questions that I can answer, feel free to reach out. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Elena. And just so that AHCVAC is aware, Elena has only been on board for a couple of weeks and she's already rolled up her sleeves and really dug into some low-hanging fruit of priorities that we've been wanting to tackle, but just haven't had the time to address. And I don't want to steal her thunder in any way or overpromise anything, but we are probably as close as we ever have been to rolling out an online appointment system that is public facing, very similar to how you would book an appointment for a DMV appointment. So, and that's all kudos to Elena because she really sees the value in something like that for the community. So she's been working closely with our county IT department to see what our options are. So hopefully we'll have an announcement about that soon. Okay, staying on the topic of staffing and changes. So I don't know if you guys are familiar, but we had a longtime employee, Veterans Claims Representative Joe Ford, and he actually retired in March. So that position is vacant. And then we also have our supervising Veterans Claims Representative, Eric Ensley, just received a promotion within another unit of OC Community Services. So Eric is going to be working under our Community Investment Division as an administrative manager, specifically focusing on veterans employment and training programs, which is an area of that division that they have been wanting to address for a while. They're just, you know, waiting for the right person for the job. And so they've identified Eric Ensley and he has accepted that promotion, and his promotion was actually effective last Friday. So he's wrapping up some pending items in the Veterans Service Office, but he'll be moving on to his new assignment, which means the supervisor position is going to be vacant as well. So as you know from our other updates regarding staffing, as soon as a position becomes vacant in the county, because the county has a hard hiring freeze, those positions automatically become frozen as soon as they're vacant. But I'll say that because Renee Ramirez and Samantha Atkinson are on this call, we've had very strong support from our executive leadership to advocate for unfreezing those positions through the Veterans Service Office because of the critical need. So we, as soon as they became vacant, we automatically submitted a request to unfreeze those positions. Renee and Samantha have approved that, and now it's with Central Human Resources. And the board has been very supportive of filling vacant positions with the Veterans Service Office because they are very well aware of our critical need as well. So we're very encouraged that Joe Ford's position will be backfilled quickly because we're not gonna have to run a new recruitment for that. You're able to use that same recruitment that we did for the new hires, those three new claims reps that we hired a few months ago. That's still an active hiring list, and we left several candidates under consideration for those positions so that as new vacancies came up, we didn't have to run a whole new recruitment. And I probably could have filled those positions five times over because we had that many qualified candidates on there. So I'm hoping as soon as we get the final approval to fill Joe Ford's position, that we'll be able to make our selection and get somebody on board very quickly. And then as far as Eric's position, it has been a while since we run a recruitment for the supervising claims rep, so we will have to run a new recruitment. But again, we have strong support from our executive management and the board to approve those positions. So that is in the queue. And as soon as we receive final approval, we will work with Central HR to run a recruitment and get the most qualified candidate in that position as well. Any questions on staffing concerns? We take three steps.
Sorry, just a point of clarification.
Sure.
Just for my situation over nurse, how long currently have those positions been vacant?
So Joe Ford retired at the end of March. So it's just been a couple of weeks. And then Eric Ensley just received his promotion last Friday. So it's just been vacant for a couple of days.
Okay.
Thank you for that clarification. And then just before we leave the staffing updates, I wanted to mention that those three new hires that have been in training, they've already completed phase one of their CalVet accreditation training. Phase two will be completed this Thursday and Friday, and then they'll be able to sit for their exam in May. So we're moving in the right direction. Things are only getting better from here. And I will say that they're ready to get going. They feel like they know the job and that they could file a claim tomorrow. They're very confident in their training, and they've actually been practicing and filling out claims with close supervision. They can't actually do the actual filing, but they're able to do everything up until filing. So it's been very rewarding to see them in action and just to see the buzz around the office. And then the last thing I just wanted to mention, because I know it's of interest to OCVAC, is what the status is of our current wait times. So right now, if a veteran were to contact our office to schedule a new appointment, we're about 5 weeks out. And the reason why I say about is because with Joe Ford retiring, there were some cases that were pending that we were waiting on a reply back from the veteran. And so we're sort of holding on to a few appointments toward the last part of April in the event that those veterans get back to us and say, okay, I'm ready and I'd like to make my appointment. We want to be able to give them an opportunity to book an appointment first before a new veteran contacts our office. So it could be sooner if those appointments don't come through, but to be on the safe side, I'll say we're about 5 weeks out. That's all I have.
All right. Thank you for that. All right, I've had a request to go out of order. Is that okay, Erica and Jenna? Okay, we'll go ahead and move on to item 10, OC for Vets update, Kevin Alexander.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let's see, I will make this brief for you. Not a lot to report this month. We have seen an increase in a need for clinical services from the community. So we've seen more referrals into our programs. I know we see new faces on the committee here. So briefly, I am the service chief supporting our healthcare agency, Behavioral Health Services veterans program. So we have five different veterans programs here within the county supporting veterans, veteran students, as well as veteran families and military connected families. So we have several different programs in support of our veteran community directly through the county, offering case management services, therapeutic services, peer support, housing navigation, housing support, and employment support. So through our programs, we offer quite a bit of support and services for our veteran community. We've been very, very active. We've seen an increase in demand for behavioral health services. The programs are doing a great job of meeting those needs and adjusting their practices to ensure that services are available to any veteran or veteran family that needs the support. That's all I got.
Thank you for that, Kevin. Moved back in order to item 9, CalVet Link update. Ben Gales.
Thank you, Eric. Good to see everyone. I want to do a quick college fee waiver update. I thought I'd take 1 minute, just as Kevin noted, there's some new council members, just to give us a touch of background on the college fee waiver. So again, this is the program that allows dependents of service-connected veterans to go to California community colleges, Cal States, and UCs tuition-free, with many fees waived as well. Plan B is by far the most commonly used plan to access the college fee waiver. And the two big requirements there are that the veteran have at least a 0% service-connected rating, and there's also an income limit on the dependent. And so that's what I want to talk about as an update related to the income limit. So for this current cycle, the way that works is the relevant income is from the calendar year before the academic year that the student wants to go to school. So in the last calendar year with COVID hitting, a lot of folks went on unemployment. And with the CARES Act, that unemployment often put people above the income limit for the CalVet fee waiver. Unemployment income is counted. So very fortunately, in the most recent federal legislation, there actually is now an exemption of $10,200 of unemployment income for federal tax purposes. So this is actually going to open up eligibility to a number of dependents that were not otherwise eligible. And we're seeing this on our phone line. It was actually a great moment for me to be able to call a couple of people and just inform them about this because it completely changed their situation. So I think this is good for everyone to know, you know, and who knows if you might come across this.
Ben, can you repeat that statement?
Yeah, so the big change is that there is now $10,200 that will be excluded for tax purposes from your income. So basically, if you were over the $13,300 limit, you know, by a few thousand dollars, well, you're safe. You know, you're going to get $10,200 of that amount knocked off so that it won't disqualify you from the fee waiver. Right. And the other thing I wanted to touch on, just to pick up on Richard's great presentation, is just kind of one more piece that Richard and I have talked about related to housing, which I think would help ultimately provide even more information and guidance in looking at what decisions to make, what resources are really needed to improve veteran housing and homelessness in the county. And I think that is a little bit more of an in-depth analysis of this by name list. And so the reason I raised that, and Richard and I have talked about this, is that we took a look at the by name list number at the start of the last calendar year and the end, and it actually did not appear to be that different, the total number of homeless veterans on our by name list. And that is in a year in which this county opened approximately 125 units of permanent supportive housing for veterans, which were filled between Heroes Landing in Santa Ana and Placentia Veterans Village. So I think that there's no doubt that Richard's recommendations are absolutely directions we need to go in. And I think that a big part of that, though, in that first one and looking at that CES is really understanding, why it is that by nameless, what's driving those by nameless numbers? If we're opening new resources, why aren't they going down? I think a really in-depth analysis there would shed more light on where we want to go. That's good for me, Eric.
All right, thank you, sir. Moving on to item 11, standing committees. Do we have a communications report from Alex Maslin?
Yes. Last meeting, we talked about Sunburst Academy, I think, and I have a date for a visit to the campus for everyone to throw on their calendar. Friday, April 30th from 8:30 to 10 is the tentative visit date and time for Sunburst Academy for anyone that's interested. I'm still waiting on some word back as far as numbers, what they're comfortable having at the campus with whatever COVID protocols they have and not disrupting, obviously, the students and things like that. So I'll let everyone know once I get some more direction on that. But just wanted to get that out on everyone's calendars.
Fantastic. Thank you for that update. Anything further?
That's it for me.
All right. Do we have an update from Vlad or Mario for events and outreach?
None on my end. So events wise, May 31st, right? Memorial Day, none at this time. I did email out council members to send me any events that might be going on in your district. This was done, I think, last week with Han.
And you will be getting an update of from me for the May 31st Memorial Day activities throughout the American Legion Post. You should be getting something in the mail maybe today. at the today, if not tomorrow, at the latest.
Very good. Thank you.
African Legions have really been the main hubs of like events. The one in Orange has been doing breakfasts every Sundays, you know, aside from Easter. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Moving on to council comments, item 12. At this time, we'll go ahead and take any comments from the council.
I have one question.
No, sorry, Vlad. It's only comments. Go ahead.
You kill me. When do you foresee us being able to meet together? I know.
Never. And stop it. And stop it right now. Just stop it. And we're not doing it.
I'm a member of a commission, and we started in our city our meetings in public.
Understood. So, have you heard the governor's announcement?
No, I did not.
I'm on a number of return to campus, return to work committees, and it's kind of all up in the air. But the governor made an announcement. What was it, July 15th, June 15th? I don't know. Everything's open 100%. So take that with a grain of salt. And depending on whether there's a surge or not, I mean, that's going to dictate probably if we're going to meet in person, how we're going to meet, and if going forward we're not doing a hybridized version of this. I don't foresee us going back to 100% meeting in person. If that's something that will be pushed by the county, then I'm sorry to say that I can't take off the time from work to make every single meeting in person if it continues to be at this time of day. But as long as we can continue to meet in a hybridized fashion, then it's going to increase turnout. It's going to increase participation. We've seen that across the board. This experience over the last year has changed the way that everyone is doing business and will change the way we do business for the foreseeable future. Nothing is going back to 100% in person, especially when we look at all the variables, you know, carbon footprints that were reduced and traffic that's reduced and money spent for meeting space and meeting rooms and things like that. It's just, I think it's probably something that's revealed to most people. That's probably something that's in the past. There still will be a need for people to meet in person, but by and large, I think that that will be facilitated by hybridized fashions of meetings. Hopefully that helps. I mean, there's no hard and fast when we're going to meet again in person.
Okay.
But I'm available, you know, 7 days a week if you want to meet at the Longboard down in Huntington Beach.
I'll be contacting you, sir.
All right. Or Newport. I know that's your old hunting ground.
Totally.
So.
Totally.
All right. Any other comments?
I just have two things to say. First is, it's a great welcome to Elena Kim. We're really happy to have you here. But I did want to say, and I'm sorry they're not here to hear us say it, but, you know, I think we're all really going to miss, you know, David Hahn was terrific. And Joe Ford, and especially Eric Ensley, you know, I know he's gone on to bigger and better, but he was a tremendous force. I know when I did casework, he was just so knowledgeable. So, you know, good things are happening, but it's sad to see all those folks leave. And the other thing I wanted to say is that I wanted to thank everyone on the board, as well as Erica, for, you know, the support they gave a lot of us, and particularly on behalf of the four veterans who spoke in favor of it, who came to our OCFAC meetings and spoke in favor of the county trying to lobby for a better upgrade and corrections process for LGBT veterans whose discharges have adverse information. The county, I think you all saw, sent out that letter and directed its lobbyists to really work with the federal legislators. And I think that's actually probably going to help in that move. And I thought it was also a really great experience to work with so many people who are so supportive about it. And then the last thing I'll just say is related to the conversation Vlad and Eric were just having. I think the number one priority for our board should be to continue to do virtual outreach and to find ways to make additional outreach, because, you know, if you look at this meeting as a result, we're all supposed to advise, you know, our respective supervisors, and then as a collective voice, advise all the supervisors on the needs of veterans. We're not communicating very well with veterans. So I think we really need to look for ways to do that. And the two most effective things that I've seen in a couple of years of being affiliated with this both on the board and then it working for an office where I came to meetings, is the most effective things have been holding these meetings virtually. So if we go back to in person, which is great, I think we need to have a Zoom component so the public can make comments via Zoom. And then Eric's program of doing coffees with veterans, we need to find a way to promote that more, because I thought that was really effective. That's been some of the best feedback we've ever had.
Thank you for that. You brought up a great point, righting a lot of historical wrongs. And so I don't think there's anybody on this council that would argue that at all. So glad that one, don't ask, don't tell was repealed. And two, now we can go forth and make those corrections and right those wrongs. Those things should have never have been done. And now we can hopefully fix that by and large. So thank you. Do we have any other comments from the council?
Yes, one last one. First of all, a thank you to Supervisor Andrew Doe and Doug Chafee for their support. I was hoping that Han would be here so he could kind of elaborate or speak about the information that he sent out about EDD awarding $4.9 million to organizations in 13 counties to provide job opportunities for training veterans, but he's not here. What else? And then last but not least, happy month of the military child, everyone. And then also maybe if we can make a kind of like a thank you letter when board members leave, you know, kind of like Han, I like how everybody got the positive support towards them, kind of giving them something to add to his resume, something official from the board. You know, maybe that's something that we can table or discuss till later, since we're gone over time already.
Nope, that's great. And as no good deed goes unpunished, I will appreciate a draft from you by tomorrow at noon. Thank you. Kidding, of course. So again, let me dovetail on everybody else's comments. Fantastic. It's an honor to be your chairman for now. June, there will be elections. I will also like to welcome Elena. She has an amazing resume if you haven't read it. So glad to have you aboard. Glad to have you in that leadership position. Thanks to everyone for picking up where things were dropped. We have Jenna here today. Jenna filled some shoes that were suddenly dropped, right? So thank you, Jenna. Thank you, Erica, and always Renee for the support that you give to this council. And that is all I have for today. If there are no other comments, can I take a motion for adjournment?
I'll second.
Did someone? Oh, I guess a first, a second. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Meeting adjourned. Thank you, everyone, for your participation today. Stay safe, stay healthy.
See everybody. Take care. Bye.